Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Parenting Skills, Developing a Toolkit. Your host for today is Ms. Amber Stalker. Ms. Stalker, you may begin.
Good evening, everybody. And as Alma said, welcome to the teleconference, Parenting Skills, Developing a Toolkit. My name is Amber. I'm with the Greater New England Chapter, and I'll be your facilitator. On the line, I also have our speakers, Nancy Lowenstein and Ronnie Hochberg. Nancy Lowenstein holds a Master's of Arts degree in Art Therapy from the University of Louisville and a Master's of Science degree from Boston University in Occupational Therapy. As an occupational therapist, Ms. Lowenstein has worked with adults with neurological deficits for 20-plus years. She has worked in a variety of settings from rehab, hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and home care. In 1996, Nancy started working at the Mount Auburn Hospital Comprehensive MS Care Center in Cambridge, Mass. Nancy's day job is an assistant clinical professor at the Occupational Therapy Program at Boston University. She's been inducted into the National MS Society Volunteer Hall of Fame and is the author of Managing Fatigue in Multiple Sclerosis, published by Demos Press. Nancy is also a member of the chapter's Clinical Advisory Council, the chapter programs committee, and over the years has helped to plan and implement at least a dozen programs for people with MS as well as professional education. Ronnie Hochberg holds a Master of Science degree in Rehabilitation Counseling Psychology from the University of Wisconsin. As a psychiatric rehabilitation coordinator, she has worked with adults with severe and persistent mental illness over 30 years. She is currently a psychiatric rehabilitation coordinator at Mount Sinai Medical Center Continuing Day Treatment Program in New York City, an adjunct professor at Hunter College Department of Foundations of Counseling Program. She has been a consultant with the New York City Southern New York Chapter of the National MS Society since 1985, specializing in direct counseling services for individuals with multiple sclerosis that are newly diagnosed, families, and children. She has been a group trainer and leader for family education and peer counseling programs. I'd like to turn the program over to Nancy Lowenstein to get us started.
Thank you, Amber. And we want to thank all of you for joining us tonight. We're going to try and cover a lot of ground in 1 hour, so hopefully we can answer a lot of your questions. Many of you sent questions in at the time of registration, and we hope that you'll find the answers in tonight's talks. Briefly, our agenda tonight is as follows. After my brief introduction, Ronnie Hochberg will talk about identifying your parenting strengths and challenges, managing MS and parenting responsibilities. Her focus will be on the importance of communication, planning, prioritizing, and developing a support network. After Ronnie's talk, I'll present on managing fatigue and learning how to plan and prioritize in order to create new routines and habits to be more effective with your time and energy. If time allows, we hope to be able to take a few questions from listeners. As all of you know, on a very personal level, MS is a disease that doesn't only impact the person who is diagnosed with the disease, but has a huge impact on the family. Parents are often dealing with the question of, do I tell my children about MS? How much do I tell them about MS? Won't they feel bad? Or I don't want my children to feel burdened or to grow up too soon. These are normal questions to have. There's a growing body of research that points to the importance of providing facts about MS to reduce the fear and anxiety that children might have. Often, children make up their own stories about what MS is, based on what they hear or see. Research also points to the results that children of parents with chronic diseases or disabilities grow up being more empathetic and more attuned to those around them than children whose parents do not have a chronic disease. As Ronnie will talk, it is important to have good communication with your children and spouse and to be able to communicate to their level of understanding about MS. It's also very helpful to approach discussions with your family as an important member of the team. Ronnie?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, everybody, for being on this evening. So I will be highlighting some bullet points on the handout that was provided at the time that you registered. This handout is to be used as a toolkit for your own personal use. And as I said, I will be highlighting specific key points as we go through the discussion this evening. During the discussion, I would like you to consider the following questions. Some of the questions were raised at your registration time. What are the obstacles, the barriers, for you to discuss MS symptoms with your kids? What makes it difficult for you to hear how your kids feel about MS? Is it hard for you to find the appropriate language to describe your MS symptoms? What's very key is communication, but communication is not just about talking. It includes listening and hearing for the feelings behind the words that your children and your family members are speaking. It requires hearing varying points of view, also observing changes in behaviors as an early recognition and identification of any problems. The goal is to have a two-way conversation, to talk with each other, to avoid lecturing, especially with adolescents. Being open and honest in our communication is really what develops long-term trusting relationships. In developing a toolkit, we need to consider the children's stage of development. Helping children understand the changes that MS brings can be hard to explain, especially when the symptoms are invisible, such as fatigue, mood, and cognitive changes. Children need to understand that they will be able to adapt and cope. Children are resilient, and they're less fragile than you think. Temper the information that you provide to them at their maturity level. There's many different ways that we can give information. Recognize the different learning styles that children have, using audio, written, computer sites, and even DVDs. Remember that children need to be children. Providing them with responsibilities is a part of being a family member, but recognize that they need to be a kid, balancing it out with responsibilities. Adolescents can be self-involved. Their stage of development is to separate and individuate. Try not to take their behavior as personal, recognizing it as a stage. To increase our communication with our children, role model talking about feelings about MS. Keeping things from children to protect them can cause resentment and behavioral problems. Help kids say how they feel by giving them a feelings vocabulary so that they can articulate how they feel with you, setting aside time to talk to them, talking about how it feels for the whole family to have MS. Get angry at MS, not at each other. MS affects the entire family. And be creative. Use puppets and toys, again, going back to the stage of development that your child is in, so that they can understand and utilize the material and the information to help them. Help children prioritize and have choices in the chores that they do. Demonstrate taking control by giving them choices. Kids want things to be the way that they were, and so do family members. So if we can talk about this openly by allowing them to have some control and some choice and some power, this will make them feel stronger and a part of the family. Praise them and compliment them and let them know how grateful you are. When we talk about communicating with our children, there are many barriers. The most common communication barrier is that we're not listening to the other point of view. In the groups that I've run, oftentimes the complaints of parents about their children is that they don't know how to explain how they feel, and they don't want to burden their children. A child recently told me that he feels better when he can remember that his mom is the same person before being diagnosed with MS. Just wants mom to be mom. think of how you can be an active observer when you're unable to attend some of the activities that your children are participating in by taking pictures, videotaping activities, conference calling, texting, Skyping. There are so many different ways to be a part of an activity without being there. Be creative and demonstrate effective problem-solving skills. Common complaints of children about their parents is that they're afraid of hurting their parents' feelings. Help them to answer questions when their friends ask them about why their parent is in a wheelchair. Sometimes kids are afraid to tell their parents that they're uncomfortable having them go to a parent-teacher conference because they're going to go with a mobility aid. But it's not that they don't want their parent to go. It's that they don't know how to explain to their friends when their friends ask them why their parent is in a wheelchair. Provide factual information. Children can misinterpret what they don't understand. Common complaints of parents about their adolescents. Parenting an adolescent can be challenging with or without MS. Adolescents at times say whatever's on their mind without censoring their thoughts. But adolescents just want parents to spend time with them, to listen to them. Be mindful again of the stage of development and try not to take their comments, uncensored comments, personal. Be cautious to label saying very little for not caring. Take advantage of those unexpected moments when you're driving in the car with your teenager and making dinner. Teens like to talk spontaneously during an activity without making eye contact. When you disagree, say that I hear what you're saying. I've done my best to explain, and I think it's best that we disagree. Common complaints of adolescents about their parents. Adolescents can sometimes feel guilty when they're preparing for college, especially when they've been a key caretaker, the role of a caretaker in the family. I often hear adolescents say they feel guilty leaving their parent home alone, and they're anxious that something might happen. Allow them to know that their parent is resourceful and will ask for help when they need to find help, that they can leave the nest with confidence, that they can separate and individuate, which is what an adolescent does. Replace their fears with facts. Let them know that when they leave, things will be taken care of, demonstrating effective problem solving. I often hear parents say that they don't know what to tell or not to tell. It's important to provide children with information that they can understand. Silence can cause resentment and behavioral responses. Children can pick up on when you're pretending that everything is okay. I'm going to jump to the bottom line, what children need to know. Key point is that children need to know that MS is not a terminal disease, that you are not going to die, that MS is not contagious, that they won't be homeless. Parents are resourceful to get adequate care for their family. Uncomfortable feelings are okay, need to be talked about. Anger is a feeling, needs to be discussed. That they did not cause MS. Harsh words, behaviors, problems do not cause MS symptoms. Kids need to be kids. When they do help, let them know how grateful you are. That you don't have to do it alone. People function well when they ask for help. Children should be provided with information about MS without feeling forced or asked to attend too many MS-related activities. Let them choose which ones they want to go to. Don't assume they don't want to go or exclude them from MS activities. MS Society has many resources that can be helpful in helping children understand more about MS. There is a fabulous DVD cartoon, Timothy's Journey, which can be used as a discussion point for the family members to sit and watch together. Keep Smiling is a newsletter for children that can be mailed or interactive online. It has a lot of fun activities for the kids to do in addition to talking about feelings about MS. When a Parent Has MS, a Teenager's Guide. And then there's an online chat that teens can use to talk with other people. One of the things that I hear a lot on the in the children's support group is that kids feel that the other members on the group really understand what they're going through, that even though their friends try to do the best that they can to understand, they don't really know. So a teen's chat line could be helpful for that. Also, utilize other resources that you have available to you through the school, teachers, guidance counselors, pediatricians, taking your kids to the MS Comprehensive Care Center to give them information that they can understand, and using online supports. There is an online activity and coloring, free coloring pages that can be printed on activityvillage.co.uk. So, Nancy, did you have anything to add?
I think what we mentioned at the very beginning, Ronnie, is also that idea of creating a team. Your family is your team, and kind of creating that idea of everybody's on this team together. And a team doesn't work, as we always told our kids, there's no I in team, and it's a working together that's going to help everybody manage best.
That's an excellent point. And also creating a team by using the support groups that you can through the MS Society and meeting other family members is another great way to kind of build a team into team support network.
Okay. Well, I'm going to continue on. Thank you, Ronnie, for all that wonderful information. And I'm going to continue and talk about how we can help to manage, or how you can help to manage fatigue and habits. Being a parent is a tiring experience even without having multiple sclerosis. And oftentimes you're pulled in 100 different directions. So it requires learning how to balance your needs, your family needs. And on top of that, you now also have to balance the symptoms of MS. And it's very hard when you're a parent and you have MS because of the unpredictability of multiple sclerosis. You may have all sorts of things planned one day and you wake up in the morning and you're too tired to get out of bed, or your symptoms are worse. And that can create a lot of problems, because now who's going to do the carpooling and who's going to take the kids to work? So beginning to set up those supports and thinking ahead is going to be very, very helpful. And part of that is also figuring out how you can help to manage your fatigue. Hopefully with your registration, you did get some worksheets, an activity log, and a parenting strengths and goals assessment that you can use to help you with beginning to learn how to change some habits. Managing your fatigue requires changing habits, and this isn't easy, as we are creatures of habits and routines, and we like to keep control of things going on in our life. So the idea of having to give up a task can be difficult, but sometimes it's necessary, even when we have children. That means you might have to ask somebody else to take the kids to school or to pick them up. Before looking at fatigue and how you respond to that, it's important to talk to your neurologist to rule out other reasons for fatigue, such as the restless leg syndrome, sleep apnea, depression, because it can be many other things, as I'm sure you all know, that can be contributing to fatigue. But if we look at how to plan and prioritize, step one to changing your routines is to figure out if there's any pattern to your fatigue. How many of you have said at the end of the day, gosh, I'm so tired and I don't know what I did today? And we often have that response. But when you have fatigue and MS, it's very important to begin to look at your patterns. Are there times of the day that you're worse, that are worse for you, that you're more tired? Do you wake up tired? Do you wake up with energy, but by afternoon you're too tired? Are there days of the week that are worse than for you? Maybe after the day after you have a shot, or on the weekend, at the end of the week. Also look at the different tasks that you do. Do some of them make you more tired? Do some of them give you more energy? The other thing that's important to understand is, are there signs that your body is telling you that you're getting tired, that you're getting to the point of no return, that if you do anything else, you're going to be really wiped out for the rest of the day, and maybe even tomorrow? One of my patients that I was working with realized that when her vision started to get blurry, that was her body's sign that she was hitting the wall. The activity log handout can help you to look at your energy levels and analyze symptoms that you have throughout the day. It's a good thing to keep for a day or two, maybe even a weekend and a weekday. When we talk about your energy bank account, what does that mean? It's a way of thinking about energy. Energy, if you have a bank account, the balance in your bank account goes up and down. We hope it goes up more than it goes down, but it does fluctuate. You make deposits and you make withdrawals to this bank account. If you think of your energy as something that goes up and goes down, depending on the amount of withdrawals and deposits you make into your energy account, this is a good way of thinking about how to balance your needs throughout the day. So most of us, however, make many more withdrawals throughout the day, and we forget to make deposits. We're in a society that insists on being productive and going and going and going. And we look at the person who's taking a rest as being a slacker. But this is an attitude that is important to try and change. It's important to think about how to re-energize yourself, how to make deposits into that bank account or into that energy account. And everybody does it differently. Just sitting quietly listening to music work for you, maybe briefly closing your eyes for 10 minutes, maybe taking a walk, doing a little yoga, or maybe even a nap. A nap shouldn't be longer than 1 hour. If it becomes longer than 1 hour, then research shows that you're beginning to get into actual sleep cycles, and that can disrupt your nighttime sleep. So it's sometimes a matter of priorities, too. We have to think about, do I want to rest for a few minutes now or take a short nap now? So that when my kids come home from school, I can be with them to do homework, or should I run errands all day and then be very tired for them when they come home? So these are some of the choices that have to be made. We talk about prioritizing activities and tasks and how to manage your day in a way that is balanced over the course of an entire day. So planning and prioritizing your activities will help you to manage your energy. So if you've done the activity log, or even if you haven't, you can sit down and list all the activities and tasks that you do. And I'll tell you, there's many, many of them. You do them as a parent, and you do them for yourself, and you do them for your family. Once you've looked at the activities that take more energy, look at the activities that are restorative. Now you can begin to plan and prioritize your activities. There are those activities you have to do, that only you can do them. These are usually around self-care, dressing yourself, taking your shower, feeding yourself, those kinds of things. There are those activities that need to be done, such as cooking and cleaning, but maybe somebody else can do them, or maybe you can share them. There are those activities that you want to do, They're fun activities. They're leisure activities. But these are usually the first activities that we give up, that we don't take the time to do because we feel we can't have time, we don't have time for them. But sometimes these activities are actually very restorative because when we're happy and enjoying our family, that can feel good and give us energy. And finally, there are other activities which are just restorative, things like sleep or napping or doing a quiet task. I will tell you that many people will tell me that they like to watch TV or they like to go on the computer as relaxing activities. And although these can be somewhat relaxing when you stay on the computer or watch the TV for very, very long periods of time, over an hour or so, your brain is actually very, very active. Your eyes are working. So these aren't quite as restorative as you might think. So try to find activities other than doing watching TV or working on a computer when you're really trying to find activities to restore your energy. Now I want you to think of another metaphor. I want you to think of your life as a dresser or a bureau. Yes, that's right. You're reduced to a piece of furniture. This is a good image, however, for deciding how to prioritize your activities. And I'm afraid that there's a little misprint on the slide that you're looking at if you're looking at my life as a dresser. The top should read, top drawer should read, it's your have-to-do activities. So the top drawer has your have-to-do activities. And the second drawer should be your need-to-do activities, or these need-to-be-done activities. Your third drawer is the want-to-do activities. Your fourth drawer is the restorative activities. And your fifth drawer is those tasks that you can give someone else to do. Now, I always have a caveat when I talk about giving tasks to someone else to do. And that is when you give somebody another task to do, you have to let go of how you do it and allow that person to do it in their way. It's not going to be the same as you do it, but it's the important part is that the task is getting done and you aren't doing it. And maybe there's a way of adapting it or helping that person do it so that you feel comfortable with them doing it. My favorite story in this area is when I had my first child and I lived in the third floor of a walk-up. And my husband volunteered to do the laundry. And, of course, he didn't believe in separating out black, you know, colors and whites. But it was more important for me to have him do the laundry than for me to have to do it myself and have an argument and hold on to that task. So we compromised, and I brought detergent that could be used in cold water, and he did all the laundry in cold water. And if there was something very important that I needed to wash, then I would just do that myself. And that has worked out for 25 years. So it's important when you think about these tasks that you want to give to someone else, whether it's making dinner, doing laundry, going to the grocery store, picking up the children, that you have to be able to let go of how it's done and then praise the person for doing it so well. So now that your life is reduced to a dresser, what do you do with that? Well, now you can start to plan your day in a more balanced way. So when you start to plan your day, you want to think about filling it with tasks from the top four drawers. You have your activities that you have to do, but you also want to put some of your want-to-do activities in there, even if it's only a 10 to 15 minute activity of wanting to do. It's important to have those times that are for yourself and that you are enjoying. You also want to make sure that you have restorative tasks and restorative activities in there so that you can plan those times in the day when you need to sit down or you need to do something and get that energy back so that you can be there for the family events, for the dinner, those kinds of things. And so when you think of your day as a dresser, as in getting dressed, and you think about all the different things you have in your different drawers, it's helpful to think of this metaphor and how you can take something out of each drawer. The other important piece is everything cannot have the same level of importance. You have to be able to decide what tasks and activities are most important for that day And every day will be different, or may be different. So maybe you have a child parent-teacher conference that day. Well, that's not the day that you want to also go grocery shopping and go to the hairdresser. You have to be able to prioritize what tasks are most important, what ones you need to have the most energy for. I want to talk a little bit more now about how we change habits and routines and being able to do this. As I started out this presentation, changing habits and routines isn't easy. We are creatures of habit, and it's very comfortable for us to be able to just keep things as they are, even if it isn't the most efficient, even if it's hurting us or not working as well as we want it to. But there's been a lot of research on how to change habits and how to change behaviors. And the key to this is that you need to be able to see whatever the behavior is that needs to be changed as a problem. Not that it's a problem, but that you need to change something about it because it's interfering with your ability to be with your family. So if you're always tired at the end of the day or when the kids come home and you can't make them dinner or help them with their homework, do you see this as a problem? If so, then are there alternatives to your daily routines that will allow you to make deposits so that you have the energy to help at the end of the day? What are the benefits of these alternative solutions? And which ones or ones seem like they may make the most sense for you? This is where having conversations with significant others, with spouses, with your children, with other friends and family members may help you to solve a problem. Oftentimes, other people in your life want to help, but they don't know what to do, and they just get annoying, and they do things you don't want them to do, or they tell you how to do things. But be proactive. Tell them how to help. Have them part of the solution. Once you've identified an alternative to the way of doing something, give it a trial run. How did it work? What needs to be revised? Make the changes and try it again. Remember that you can always, change always feels uncomfortable the first few times you try it. But after a while, that becomes your new routine, and then it feels comfortable. So make a commitment to try to the change by talking to others and getting them involved. The other key is to set very realistic goals. So the last step in making changes is to set these goals realistically. Now, we all set New Year's resolutions, and by the second week, if we last that long, we've totally broken down on our New Year's resolution. So why is that? Well, it's because we make these vague resolutions, things like, I'll exercise more, I'll eat less sugar, I'll go on a diet. I won't yell at my kids. However, there are no concrete steps to help us make these goals work. They're just ideas. So in order to set a working goal that you can actually achieve, you want to identify a specific behavior to change. So maybe making dinner for the family. You want to have a realistic time frame. I'll make dinner for the family 3 nights a week. On Monday, Thursday, and Sunday by the end of the month. This is a goal that's clear, that you've set, and you understand how to measure it and whether you can achieve it. Now you can set the goal for any length of time, but a shorter length of time and smaller steps are better than a long, vague goal. So try and set goals in maybe 1 week or 2 week lengths of time. The other important factor when goal setting is to share your goals with other members of the family and other people in your lives. But you need to tell them that they are not your goal police, but they need to be your supporter. The other part of setting goals is they're not set in stone or concrete. There's no problem with not reaching your goal. You just need to say, well, I didn't set it right, and reset it to something that feels a little bit better and more achievable. That's the great thing about goal setting, is there is no failure. There's only learning. If you put these techniques that I've discussed into practice, slowly over time, you have a good chance of changing your habits and your routines and your behaviors, and of being able to have time with your family. As MS is a family condition, so are the solutions to managing it. Ronnie?
Yeah, so that was great, Nancy. Thank you. And I want to kind of go back to the team approach and using the metaphor of a bank account. And I think that's a really useful tool to use with the children who certainly understand about putting deposits into bank accounts. And to explain to the children that rest is like depositing money into a bank account and then can be used later on for an activity with them, that they can help you to prioritize which activity that is. So I think that that would be really quite a good way to explain to kids how you have to save time for yourself and, you know, restore so that then you can pull money out of the bank and do something with them.
Right. I also believe that we can teach our children great habits to have them learn how to save time for themselves. Because, again, a child does take a lot of time for themselves, but even as they get older and become teenagers, that begins to slip away. But if we begin to bring this idea of it's important to be, and it's okay to take some time for yourself, to be by yourself or to rest or to enjoy a quiet time with family members, then I think that's something wonderful that we can also teach our children.
Excellent. So I think this is when we will take two questions from the audience, if time allows.
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if there is any questions that you have, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question is from Joanne. Joanne, please go ahead.
That definitely explains a lot. That I never comprehended that, though. That answers a lot of questions. That is true that symptoms definitely worsen the more tired you are.
Yes, is that a question?
I mean, that's an answer, I guess.
Right.
Because
right.
I do notice that with myself, you know, the more rested I am, the more energy I have, the more I can do.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's just, earlier in the day, I do much better than if I'm exhausted, I can't do as much.
Right. And sometimes what people have the tendency to do is when they're feeling energetic, they feel they have to do everything in that time, which actually is counterproductive because then you're too tired to do anything else. So this idea of, you know, filling your day with deposits and withdrawals as opposed to just withdrawing until you can't do anything else and then trying deposit, it's usually too late at that point.
Our next question is from Carol. Carol, go ahead.
Hi. I know what I find myself doing is I'll feel great, and like you said, I'll overdo it. It's very hard for me to set limitations, and I go overboard, and I pay for it at the end of the night. I don't know how. I know to set up a schedule would be great. Sometimes that they can't follow that schedule. I'm thinking of different ways, like, I don't know, maybe I'm answering my own question. Like, the time difference now, I'm usually up at 6, now I'm up at 5. That's killing me. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that come 10 o'clock, I want to take a 3-hour nap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How old are your children?
My daughter is 15. My son's 19. He's away at school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying very hard to get into a habit of where I can take a nap a certain time of the day, but it's not always that easy.
Right. It's not always that easy. And part of it also is giving yourself permission to take a nap, but not a 3-hour nap, so not getting to that point. And there's no rules that say you have to wait until noon to take a nap. If you're tired at 10 and you can sit down and rest for a half an hour at 10, that's okay. You know, I think we're all so used to feeling that, you know, a nap isn't good until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But when you have MS, your needs are very different. And it's about giving yourself permission to say, it's okay, I'm not being lazy. I need to take a rest now so that I can have energy later on.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if there's any questions you have, please press the number 1 key on your phone. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay. I want to thank Nancy and Ronnie. I've learned a lot from this teleconference. I want to remind everybody that we actually need to do a short survey. Our operator will help us do that. So please stay on the line and give us your feedback. We'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this begins our polling session. Our first question, I have identified one of my parenting strengths. Press the number 1 key for agree, number 2 for disagree, number 3 for no opinion, does not apply. Again, I have identified one of my parenting strengths. Press the number 1 key for agree, the number 2 key for disagree, and the number 3 key for no opinion, does not apply. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our second question. I have identified one of my parenting trouble spots and feel confident I can work towards a resolution. Press 1 for excellent, press 2 for good, press 3 for fair. Again, I have identified one of my parenting trouble spots and feel confident I can work towards a resolution. Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. I am more committed to developing my parenting skills and support a network. Again, I am more committed to developing my parenting skills and a support network. Press 1 for strongly agree. Press 2 for agree. Press 3 for disagree. Again, the question is, I am more committed to developing my parenting skills and a support network. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, and 3 for disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while I prepare our next question. I am more aware of the importance of communication as a parenting tool. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for disagree. Again, I am more aware of the importance of communication as a parenting tool. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, and 3 for disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our final question. Final question. I enjoy learning through a teleconference format. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for disagree. Again, I enjoy learning through a teleconference format. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, and 3 for disagree. Ladies and gentlemen, the polling has closed. Back to you, Amber.
Thank you. I wanted to thank everybody again for attending. I wanted to thank Nancy and Ronnie for all the work that they continue to do for the National MS Society and for this teleconference and taking the time out to develop the information. Nancy or Ronnie, do you have any final comments?
I don't.
Hey, Nancy? Ronnie?
No.
Okay. Well, I guess this concludes our teleconference for this evening. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact your chapter of the National MS Society. As Ronnie gave you resources, those are available if you call or email. We'd be happy to send anything out to you. If you have any further questions, again, please contact your chapter. And thank you all. Have a good evening.